C2PR. Number 13A.
We went through the chapter, through the prayer of spirit with its seven subtones. And when one has perhaps done that, one likes to see also if one can substantiate, if one can verify the findings. And we have done that with the prayer of mind in various ways. Here in spirit, I perhaps can give you another way of testing an analysis. See, for instance, here we have said that in the epitome, that it is a prayer of reflection through the culturing of spiritual qualities. And we say, yes, that's wonderful. Spiritual qualities are naturally the nature of God, the nature of spirit. These are the qualities. But then you can ask yourself, is that not just a term for me? What are spiritual qualities? How could I define spiritual qualities? So that it is not just one expression, one term. And therefore, what I usually then do, I take again the whole text of the prayer of spirit, and I put my blinders on, like this. And I say to myself, I read through the whole text again very quickly, just for the sake of making a list of qualities that are expressed in the text. So that I have a whole list of spiritual qualities, and at the same time, in a column next to it, perhaps I would write down the opposites, what is wrong. Because always an idea will stand out better if one compares it with its opposite. That's an old rule since the Greeks, that really through comparing with the opposites, things stand out clearer and become much more definite. So what you could do at home is, we are not going to do that because it takes too much time. You would just go through the text and make those two lists. And it's quite good to do that because, as we said this morning, one gets used too much in Christian Science to the terminology of Christian Science, to the idiom of Christian Science, until finally we use terms like mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, you know. Like the parrot also says it when you come home. Huh? He also could be trained to say, hi, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And greets you this way. He doesn't know what he's saying. And so it is with other terms. So if you would do that, or if you do that at home, you would, for instance, find, and I read them out, just that we get the flair of it, now the atmosphere of it, the touch of it, and you will see how many spiritual qualities are actually given here within a page and a half, within a very short text, a whole unfoldment of such spiritual qualities about how to reflect the one. And so I just read them down, what she says. So she says that these means of prayer, the spiritual qualities of reflection, are absolute concentration, gratitude, remembering the blessings, expressing gratitude, patience, meekness, love for God, good deeds, daily watchfulness, keeping the commandments, following Jesus' example, habitual struggle to be always good, longing to be better and holier, striving to assimilate more and more of the divine nature, watchfulness, devout obedience, veritable devotion. Can you see a whole list? Now, this is a method I always use, and well, I know that those who don't like to study, they feel, why should I do that? Is that quite enough to say what spiritual qualities are? But I feel always that doing that and sticking to the text is culturing the tonality even of such terms. Not only, we don't need to culture only the tonality of the capitalized terms, but we should also culture the tonality of these key terms in Christian Science, so that when we use them, we have a whole world, a whole atmosphere of them. If you go through the text and say to yourself, well, what are the false qualities of worshipping? How can you not reflect? What are the false qualities that do not reflect the Infinite One? Also, that is of use, that we are facing face to face the false concepts. Well, here she has a whole list also. She says, what are these false ways of worshipping? Everything that materializes worship, that we only admit it theoretically instead of spiritually, theoretically. That there are verbal expressions of thanks instead of gratitude. It's only spoken gratitude, a wordy gratitude. Audible words for acknowledging the blessings. See, it is a wrong sense. Or simply asking God. Audible prayer, long prayers, outward worship, superstition, creeds, insincerity, barren lives, the heart far away from truth and love. So in this way you get the whole list of the negatives. And so one takes those lists and sits down and ponders them a bit, and one gets more and more that distinction between what are true spiritual qualities and where is the danger of missing the spiritual qualities, so that, as we know, Mrs. Eddy would say that prayer can also be a danger because we use false spiritual qualities and then we think that's prayer, and yet it does not give fruits or yield fruits. With this subject also, we say, well, it is the spiritual qualities which brings us really into the unfoldment of spirit, which gives us the fruits of spirit. And therefore, again, we say, well, if that is in the main caption, in the main epitome, really that should run right through the text. Does it really show that if we worship spiritually, that the text says, then you make spiritual progress? Does the text really say that if we don't worship spiritually, that we are not making a spiritual progress, that we hinder our spiritual progress? And so I would go right through the text again and make two lists or two columns. The one column would be what is true unfoldment, what does she says? Does it bring unfoldment or fruits? And the next list would be, does it really hinder my progress and give no fruits? And one then is again surprised how within just two pages or a page and a half or so, she brings that out over and over again. For instance, she says that spiritual worship, therefore all those qualities which I enumerated under spiritual qualities, that they bring unfoldment. In which way? And you train again your spiritual sense, your tonality, because she will not always use the same term and says, well, that brings unfoldment, well, that brings unfoldment, well, that brings unfoldment. But unfoldment then is brought out in a dozen ways of words. And that's important because then your ear gets used to the hues and shades of the capitalized terms. So she says, spiritual worship brings unfoldment, namely, we receive more. See, we receive more. They bring blessings. They bring spiritual growth. They mold and fashion us anew. They regenerate. Can you see that there's all an advancement, an unfoldment, that it's all fruitful? We are enabled then to follow Jesus' example. It's not just that we should follow, but we are then enabled. It's a great step forward. And we reach then the signs of Christianity. I like to take these examples so that you can see these terms have nothing in common word-wise. Word-wise, they don't seem to have anything in common. Tone-wise, they all have a common denominator that if you worship spiritually, that you can't help that that has an unfoldment, that that brings fruit, that that brings success, that that leads you on and on. So we have also to culture ourselves also in the tonality of these single terms so that we can use all kinds of words to express that idea. You see, that's enigma, that is really the key, how to open up the Bible. See, the Bible is a terrific training ground for the system, to culture our consciousness in the system. Because the Bible would even use more words, different symbols, different examples than the textbook does. Much more. Because the textbook can really operate with abstract ideas. And abstract ideas or abstract terms are always much easier, much cleaner, so to say, much more definite in bringing out what they mean. And therefore, one doesn't need so much embellishment. Whereas the Bible, you see, the Bible was written long before, anyway, the Old Testament, long before the Greek period. Therefore, long before some kind of logical reasoning set in on the people in Palestine. And so they still had to use very crude symbols to bring out something. Very crude symbols. They couldn't just go back and fall back always to some very clearly defined terms, abstract terms. The Bible has practically no abstract terms. It's all about trees and about cows and about asses and about rivers and about the ocean and the rain and the dewdrops and I don't know what. It's a language of nature, language of history. They knew history, their history of their tribes and so on, tribal history. All that was known to them. So they could easily use tribal history to define a spiritual idea, but they could also use, say, symbols from nature to define the very same idea. They could do that very easily. And therefore, reading the Bible needs that ability to think in tonality. I always think, though I can't repeat it from, I think it's from Hosea or Micah, I just don't know, but one of the minor prophets. He wants to bring out, for instance, the power of mind. power of mind. So he starts out his prophecy trying to explain what is the power of mind. Well, they didn't have the term mind, nor did they have really a sense what is power. It was too indefinite. So they said, well, you know, in order to show that God is that power of manifestation, they didn't know the term manifestation. Well, in order to show you that God is the power of manifestation that cannot be resisted. That's quite a clear statement, a short statement in our language, in our metaphysical language. When they wanted to bring out, they couldn't say that way. But they said, how on earth could I bring it out through which symbol? So they say, well, the Lord on high, he roars like a lion. He comes down from the mount, and he treads on the hill. And he treads the hill down, you know, like wax before the fire, so that everything lies flat. You see, gives a terrific sense of power. Of the power from on high, irresistible, and everything that stands in the way is overcome and lays flat. Well, perhaps if they would have lived in America, let's say they lived at that time in America near the Niagara Falls, they perhaps would have said, well, the water comes from on high and falls down, and everything that is in the way will be flattened out, or will be not flattened out, but will be carried away. I would use another natural symbol. I will get again that terrific sense of the Christ power coming from on high, and nothing can resist that Christ power. So we today say it very easily, mind manifests itself. We know that is a power, we know that nothing can resist it, we know that everything has to yield. That's very simple. So that, you know, to occupy one's thought over years and years with the tonality in the Bible naturally gives one an ability perhaps, or a sensitiveness, that when one reads the textbook, that one can also at once detect these tonalities. But can you see what I mean here? You have a text of 2 pages, and when you have read it, I bet you didn't feel, when you studied it, you didn't feel that here she wants to bring out, among others, that the spiritual qualities are so that they always unfold and bring fruit, that they always push us further. But the moment we go through the text and see that all these many expressions have one common denominator, one common tone, we can reduce all these many quotes that I've read out, one can reduce them just to one tone, namely spiritual qualities have unfold or bring unfoldment. And in the same way, naturally one can take the negative and see that also the text shows that in the negative. That the text says, if we worship materially, that hinders progress. And that hindering progress, for instance, she says, we incur the sharp censure our master pronounced on hypocrites. We are blamed for it instead of blessed for it. We get the ingratitude of barren lives. That's not very progressive. That's really hindering progress. It clips the strong pinions of love. We can no more fly and spread our wings. We cannot go further. It hinders man's spiritual growth. It keeps man from demonstrating his power over air. You hear the constant sense of being hindered, of being held back, of stagnation. Whereas the other one gives always a sense of unfoldment. So this is another way how I would take the text and check on my findings. Say, well, if I have a certain kind of feeling that the epitome, that the pith of the second prayer is that it all has to do with culturing spiritual qualities, because they alone bring unfoldment, then I must go to the text and check on that and say, well, is that just one statement within two pages, or is this the common denominator of what is being said practically on every second line? If it is said practically on every second, third line, then I know that I have touched the right tone. But if I don't find any proof of it in the text, or perhaps just one statement, then I know, no, I didn't catch the tone. That's just a sideline. I must catch that tone which goes right through the tone of the second prayer. That's clear too. Yeah? Now, let's take again the epitomes for the seven subtones and see if we can find in it a irresistible order, a creative order. See, we said that will be always a test, that the subjects will unfold in an order that cannot be changed. Therefore, in an unchangeable order. And with that, we culture the law of creativity within ourselves. First of all, how would I do that? We are in the second prayer, and I will perhaps first see why this second prayer is not the first prayer, why it is after the first prayer. Why can't I take the prayer of spirit as the first prayer? Well, we have touched on that already a bit. Namely, we have seen that the second prayer of spirit is really the prayer of reflection. And before we can reflect, we must know what we should reflect. So the prayer of mind first shows us what is God, first shows us that we should have the desire to know God as he is. And once the text has shown us what God is, namely, we have seen the nature of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So only then we can say, now I can reflect God. If we would not have the first prayer with its introduction to the definition of God, we wouldn't have that prayer. We would reflect something that is indefinite, something that we believe in, and not something that we understand. Then we would reflect the divine being without knowing what the divine being is. So we can see very easily that the second prayer comes and says, I take the first prayer to the desire to know God as he is, and now I put everything I have within me into this prayer, into this desire. The moment I say I put everything into it, I mean the substance of it, I make it substantial, I make it real, therefore I get the sense of substantializing the first prayer. So the second prayer is nothing else but taking the first prayer and substantialize it through these spiritual qualities. So we give to that desire more depth, more substance. And so I ask now, we come to the seven subtons, I ask now, how can I give to the first prayer substance? Through reflection. What means reflection here? And so the question was, through which spiritual qualities can this reflection be brought forth? And so we saw that in order to worship spiritually, where do you have to begin? Well, you have to begin with that what we have up to now. Up to now we only had the desire of mind. So I have to start with consecrating myself through thought, energy and desire to that first prayer. In that way I have spirit as mind, I worship spirit, mind, namely the consecration of thought and desire. That means I begin to focus constantly on the first prayer, that's consecration. I focus always on that. I don't think, well, there is another prayer that might be better. Well, why do I have to do this? Huh? I have to reject that to scatter my fire. People like then to scatter their fire and say, well, is this the right kind of prayer? Will this really work? Will this really bring me anywhere? Isn't there somewhere another prayer? Shall I not do something else? And he says, no. Here you start. You concentrate and consecrate both yourself to that desire. To know God as he is. Once we have done that, and say, all right, I do that, then we substantiate that consecration even more. Now we come to spirit as spirit, namely by seeing already and be grateful for that which I have already received. I substantiate now that which I already have, even if it's just a tiny little thing. And that's always in spiritual birth that we have to take what we already have and work with that and not with what we have not. We cannot start with what we have not and just wish we had it. We start with that which we have.